Well, thank you, Carrie. Thank you, Peter, for the invitation to participate in this important symposia. And both Dan James, my co-author, and I, and having passed through Wisconsin and knowing Larry and working with Larry for and indirectly more than directly, in our case, I think, or at least in my case, he did fulfill all of those characteristics that Bob so graciously shared with us on his first presentation there. What I'd like to do, I'm going to also add a few comments and a tribute to Larry, and then move into the technical part here with the challenge, hypothesis, and project characteristics and experimental protocol of what we call the Walnut Creek Watershed Project. Some of the data we're looking at are stream water quality, crop response, grain yield, and quality response to the late spring nitrate test. And after reviewing that success story into some of where the work has led since that time. I took a little different tack on Larry's assessing it. I came up with 54 from publications from the Scopus search there. Bob found a few more there, so Scopus obviously didn't find all of them. But the real point of this is that there's a 300-fold increase in the impact that he had from those publications in terms of their citations. That's really what means more than the number that anybody has. It's whether that information is being used, and Larry's definitely was. But even more important than that, and it was stressed, is that Larry communicated well with multiple farmer, industry, and environmental communities at all times. These are the characteristics that Dan and I felt really made him an outstanding scientist. Now, the experiment that we're going to look at today, it builds around basically the challenge of the Midwest corn soybean production system. This is a system that has high fertilizer nitrogen use. The corn soybean system is a major source of nitrate to the surface water and Gulf hypoxia. It's a leaky system. It's a lot of the area is artificially drained and rain-fed, and the soils are high in organic matter content. That's what makes the nitrogen management, as you are well aware, the challenge, and leads to the opportunities to develop the decision aids, the decision support systems that Larry is recognized for and did such a wonderful job in promoting to all clients, the industry, the farmers, to the research community. From that challenge, Dan and I decided to create what we called maybe the Bundy hypothesis. And that was that decision support systems could be developed and used to improve nutrient management practices and thus increase the efficiency and reduce the export to surface and groundwater resources. He did that through what the industry recognizes as implementation of the four R's: the right sources, the right rates, the right times, and the right places. So as we begin to apply that philosophy to the Walnut Creek Watershed Project, I'll give you a few characteristics of the study area. It's about a 400-hectare extensively tile-drained sub-basin located within a little over 5,000-hectare Walnut Creek watershed south of Ames, Iowa. Now, if you're familiar with Iowa, there's actually a couple of different Walnut Creeks. This is the smaller one of the two. The other one's over by the Neil Smith Center there. This is just south of Ames there. It was started, this watershed activity, when the ARS established the soil tilth lab, and there were some of the original MESA projects, the Management System Evaluation Areas. This is one of the original watersheds that was given a lot of characterization during the early 1990s. That characterization by the mid-1990s led to a pre-study assessment of pre-study management was being dominated by the continuous corn and corn-soybean rotations with a fall anhydrous ammonia application that the farmers were using. We then applied in this study the late spring soil nitrate test as the decision support tool and monitored the response to that through stream water quality, leaf chlorophyll, end-of-season stalk nitrate, grain yield, and grain quality. All were evaluated. The experimental protocol, this shows the Walnut Creek watershed in its entirety. And then we created this paired watershed approach to study this. Watershed 220 was our experimental watershed where we applied the test to, and then the two controls, 210 and 230, they were the standard management that was being used by the farmers within the area. Watershed 220 consisted of 16 fields, 7 different farmer cooperators, a corn-soybean rotation, and we honed in on the fact that the starter fertilizer application or pre-plant application would be 56 kilograms per hectare, using the late spring nitrate test then to determine how much additional fertilizer should be applied, side dress that at the V6 growth stage, and within each of those fields created check strips that were fertilized either with no nitrogen or with greater than 220 kilograms per hectare fertilizer in. So that basically the high-end levels were what we would consider a non-limiting for the production characteristics of the time. And then we monitored water quality at the various outlets coming out of those watershed areas. They're the 220 outlet, the 210 outlet, the 230 outlet. Those are the points which the tile lines came to that open streams at that area, and that was where the monitoring had been set up before the study was initiated and monitored throughout the course of the experiment. As you're well aware, the late spring nitrate test is based on soil testing, with samples being collected when the corn is roughly 6 to 12 inches tall, and then there is equations developed to calculate the additional fertilizer that is needed to be applied to meet the crop needs. Applied then through various liquid sources there, and you can see the stages here when the treatments were being imposed at this watershed scale. Looking at the relative corn yield, excuse me, and this is based on here the percent of the non-limiting nitrogen strips, the dark purple being the LSNT decision aid treatments there, pretty much 92 to 99% of the non-limiting nitrogen one. The light blue one was the pre-plant only, and obviously there was a bit of a nitrogen response across the fields to that situation there. And so that shows that the LSNT basically was hitting the crop need. Looking, however, at the some of the details then, you know, and back up here, you notice 1998 here was the lower one of the two. 1998 was one of those unique years where April and early May were extraordinarily warm. Obviously, mineralization of the soil organic matter was proceeding at a rapid rate. And in fact, the technician that was working on this project specifically and doing a lot of the coordination was one that we teased periodically. Dana Dennis was our, sorry, I was thinking the name Dana. I teased him periodically during that period of 1998 that what was going to happen was he was going to go out and do the late spring nitrate test, and we were going to come back with high values. And then it was going to rain, it was going to muck us things up for all of us on this particular test. And I guess maybe a little too prophetic, but we finished the test, we finished putting on the application. As he pulled out of the last field, it started to rain from the after side dressing, and it rained for 3 weeks, almost nonstop, and it was turned out to be extraordinarily wet. And you can see here by the stalk nitrate level in the 1998 samples, it was at the deficient category, whereas all of the other years, the stock nitrate at the end of the season was either in the sufficient or even here in 2000, what would be up over 2, which would be classified up into the excessive level of stock nitrate. We're probably experiencing a little bit of drought there in 2000. But at any rate, you can see the yields were pretty typical for the area except for the 1998, which was diminished by that excessive rain and the nitrogen deficiency. Our grain protein levels, the starch characteristics, the oil content. are pretty normal. But the real test of this study was, could we have an impact on the water quality? And I'll be honest, as part of the team, research team, I was a bit skeptical when we designed this project. I said, I don't know whether we can see this really at the watershed scale or not, whether it's going to really be detectable. I wanted to believe it would be, but I will admit I was a skeptic as we started the study. And this was, of course, what the pretreatment situation was there with the nitrogen that had been measured during the early stages of the MESA project. Then starting in 1997, we initiated the late spring nitrate test in the 220 watershed. And as you can see, we pulled the nitrate levels in the stream outlets down significantly during the course of that study, and it increased as we went along. However, after the four-year study, when we no longer were able to compensate the producers for their participation in this study, they returned to standard practices of the basically fall fertilization. And you can see here that within 14 months, the stream water content of nitrate came back up. So the impact of Larry's idea and the decision aid and definitely works, but it has to be applied. And this is also the message that he recognized when he talked with farmers. If they didn't want to do it, it was not going to be a practice that would be accepted. So again, this was showing the decline, the increase, and then the reversion to the former practices, mainly because of what the farmers told us was cost of that late spring sampling and the risk associated with if that rain came a little bit between the sampling and before they could get out and the crop got away from them. And of course, this was done during the late 1990s, early 2000s there. Most of the fertilizer industry providers didn't have the high clearance machines that are becoming available now, two decades later. So, you know, the risk of not being able to get back through those fields was just too great to trust that approach. And again, it is intensive because you have to take those soil samples out there. But it was a project that was orchestrated with several of us, technicians, scientists working together with the farmers, and proved that the idea was indeed valid and could be have a measurable effect on stream water nitrate. Again, the tests are based on the sampling, too costly and risky. So then the next thing was to begin to look at some of the other ideas, some of the other strategies that farmers might be willing to move into. And you'll hear a lot more in upcoming presentations on the crop sensing, but you got a number of those that look at the leaf greenness there and on up the remote sensing, doing some just delayed side dress applications, or ultimately moving toward the identification of field management zones to try to achieve those goals. Again, speaking to the choir, you're familiar with most of these different ways of gathering the leaf greenness there. And, of course, you then need to calibrate those sensors, and I'm sure Newell and others are going to go into the details of this, but calibrate those sensor readings against different levels of nitrogen. You can see that in both of these site studies, they were successful and proved the technology will work. The mid-season side dressing study that spun off of those, we then had different nitrogen rates, again, using the high rate, being about just a little under 200 kilograms per hectare there, which was the farmer's historic rate, the H treatment, M being the economic optimum rate based on 10 years of research data across the watershed, a low rate, in this case 69 kilograms per hectare, just a little bit higher than we used in the 220 project, but basically just the starter level, and then the mid-season side dress coming back at the V16 stage to see what we could do at that point in time. This shows the yield levels across here for the corn year, the soybean year, corn year, and soybean year for the different treatments, the low, economic optimum, the high rate, and then the late mid-season there. And you can see here by the nitrate levels. It's always over the high nitrogen rate treatment where we were having the increased leakage and the increased nitrate coming down through the stream system. So the soil testing at V6 worked for determining the rates, but the farmers perceived it as too costly. The crop sensing was feasible, but nitrogen deficiencies on those high organic matter soils often weren't apparent until mid-season. And so then the side dress crop also may be not fully used. The side dress nitrogen may not be fully used by the crop either. So it's another challenge. The next was to move to the crop yield zones by getting a long-term data. Here's about 8 years' worth of data that we collected on one site there in central Iowa, looking at the different patterns for the two crops, pulling all that data together then to create management zones to then use with a number of the different soil characteristics and how this can come together for management zones. Obviously, those management zones each need their own prediction curve here for the toe slope, the back slope, the foot slope, and the shoulder areas to get what the nitrogen response. So this is the protocol that was being moved through. And again, looking toward the idea of decision aids and the way that Larry would have approached this. And then implementing that on the on-farm trials. Here showing the landscape, the toe slope, the side slope, the upper part and the shoulder. Here being your maximum yields that were produced off of those landscape positions. The economic nitrogen rate differences that came out of that area. The amount that came from the soil of nitrogen here on this set. And then you've got the nitrogen use efficiency. Here, down here in this toe slope, this would be nitrogen use efficiency defined as of the really fertilizer nitrogen use efficiency level there of what was taken up from compared to what was applied. So overall, side dressing nitrogen rates based on soil testing can improve nitrogen use efficiency and quality. Based on crop sensing may be difficult because of the narrow window between deficiency symptoms and efficient crop uptake. Yield zones can serve as nitrogen rate zones, but specific prescriptions must be developed for each zone. And finally, optimizing end fertilizer rates alone will not solve the nitrate water quality problem, but obviously is a good place to start. So with that, this is our thank you to Larry for his wonderful inspiration along this line. That entertain questions. Some questions?
Yeah. Doug, you told a good story about how you were able to change water quality with this practice. Are you aware of any other cases where people actually go in stream and say we improved water quality with the practice? Is this regarded?
I am not. Now, I, as far as I know, this is one of the most comprehensive where we've actually been able to go to that stream level. And like I say, I was a skeptic and said, well, we did it.
I guess I'll follow up with that. Would you say that's more because you were lucky and it's impossible to do, or because it really hasn't been tried?
I think it's because it hasn't been tried because it's costly. The sheer cost of doing an experiment at that scale with the farmer participation, and you know, I tongue-in-cheek said 1998 because of the rains coming in right after the test. We had a cooperative agreements with those seven farmers to compensate them if their yields were dropped below their standard practices. And it cost the lab, I remember, somewhere between $10,000 and $12,000 to one farmer because his yield dropped down. Now, the scientists kind of think maybe it was also his hybrid selection, but an agreement is an agreement. But if you think about the number of scientists that were out there, and when we do that late stalk, the stalk nitrate sampling, we probably had 8 to 10 scientists and technicians walking those fields for the better part of a week. When we did the late spring soil test, we had 3 to 5 technicians. Some of us didn't like to pull soil samples as well, so we let the technicians do that. Pull them through our analytical lab, All of this. So I mean, if you added up the total budget, which I wasn't in charge of that part, but it was an expensive study. And I think that's probably why we don't see more of this scale of testing, in my opinion.
Doug, you showed the nitrate concentrations through 2004. Has that trend continued upward since that time? And then a follow-up question is, if you guys put your heads together and put the best times forward in that watershed and your apparent recovery efficiency is still below 50%, would you like to comment on that?
Well, the monitoring has continued on the watershed. And this is where my personal research and Dan's diverge, and that Dan would be much better able to answer what the trends have been in the water quality since that period in time. So I have to say that I can't answer that one. The low fertilizer end use efficiency on those Midwestern soils in part comes because of this tremendous reserve that the soil pool in its various forms is having. And so as we develop these future management zones and those types of things, that, you know, getting that soil balance with the fertilizer balance in order to get the use efficiency up, or actually where my program starts to go into the more of the landscape use and the other cropping systems. And many people don't like this, but corn and soybean can't be done across the whole state of Iowa. It has to be a diversified crop rotation so that you can then have areas in the vulnerable areas where you can catch the nitrogen that's leaking out. This is where there's a place for the forages for the and obviously getting over into the whole bioenergy arena. We now have markets that can do something with other than just the grains. And so this is what's encouraging to me about ultimately for the environment as a whole and the landscape as a whole getting the direction we need. So thank you very much.